is not like TV, only better.
Television! Teacher! Mother!
Secret lover.
What, that's it? That's your movie?
Well, I said that I had an idea for a movie.
Guys, this is the Screen Watching Podcast. My name's Dan, joined by Simon. We watch the shows, we watch the movies, we talk about them on the podcast. Yeah. Except, I mean, we will be doing that in this week's show. Like, don't think that we're breaking format. But we've got something a little bit different this week in that, how often do you get to listen to a podcast where one of the hosts goes off and hosts their own little movie festival? See the way I called it a little movie festival, being really dismissive?
Don't worry, a lot of people are calling it that. That's
fine. Yeah. So I thought before we kickstart the podcast, and only because I didn't want to do the conversation twice with Simon before we started recording and then afterwards, I thought let's kickstart the podcast. We'll find out the festival. It's in full swing. There was a drive-in screening of The Blob and something else I was excited by, which wasn't playing
Killer
in my state.
From Outer Space. Yep.
No, there we go. Yes. Two classics. How did that go?
That went pretty well. We actually got about 40 cars. Hello, everyone. Good morning, screen watchers, or good evening, wherever you're listening. We had a fun night at the drive-in. We were up against the Matildas final game, which we've had a little bit of bad luck the way the dates have fallen this year. We were up against a couple of high-profile things for opening last night.
Yeah, but Simon, quietly, just thinking about the demographics of the people coming out to the drive-in to go and see The Blob, and this is 1983's The Blob?
83, 35th anniversary, or 88,
yeah.
It was 88, I really
it's not 88, it's 83, I reckon, nailed it. But anyway, the sort of people turning out to the drive and see that, they're not necessarily the sort of people who are so concerned about the Matildas game.
Well, I figured if you're really determined to see The Blob and Killer Clowns from Outer Space, you're going to come to this one-off screening, especially knowing that the Matildas failed in their bid to
what?
Win the World Cup.
Simon, you don't use that language.
And they'd already let themselves down and then let the country down by their efforts. it wasn't bad. 40 cars turned up. We had a similar amount of people at the opening night last night. And that sounds like small bickies. But in terms of getting your film festival known and getting it out there and raising awareness of it, and we were at a new location here in Sydney last night at the Event Macquarie Centre, that's not bad. And we had a good night honouring the two guys, Nick Nicolau and Paul Catter, from a company called Makeup Effects Group, who for the last 30-odd years have been creating all the horrible monsters and terrible flesh wounds that you've seen up on screen, most recently in Talk to Me, the big hit at the moment, and they've done some amazing work in that. So, yeah, it was a good opening night.
Yeah, no, great. I'm thinking you were talking about 40 cars for the Blob and Killer Clown screening. I'm thinking, like, I've gone and seen events there. So I remember very beginning of the pandemic, maybe it was just pre-pandemic, I'm not too sure. I went to a screening of American Graffiti, you know, the classic film, like, great drive-in movie. And when I was there, like, you had a bunch of, like, car club people that turn out for a thing like that. But realistically, there were probably about, like, 40, 50 cars for that, for, like, another retro screening. So, like, that seems about the right number.
And it's a twin drive-in. At the other end of the drive-in was the Barbie movie, and they had about
40
or 50 cars. They had the Barbie movie on there.
Never even heard of it.
And they had about 40 cars there. So that was kind of like your standard Friday night at the drive-in. So, yeah, we were pretty happy with that.
Yeah. That was the Blacktown drive-in in Sydney. I kind of missed that one.
And they've done it all up. Well, it's been a few years now, but they did it all up in a beautiful sort of retro drive-in look. So if you want to have the whole sort of 50s experience at the drive-in, head on out there and do burnouts in the car park.
Yeah, I've only ever known it as the post-refit. So, like, that's certainly, you know, since maybe about 2017, I reckon I went there the first time.
I remember that. Here I go being my old man thing again. I remember the heyday. Well, not the heyday. No, that was back in the 50s and 60s. But when
you were also a young man then.
Shut up. I was also the when there was like 8 or 9 drive-ins here in Sydney. I'd argue that maybe my very earliest movie memory is Disney's Peter Pan at the North Ryde drive-in, which isn't far from where the Macquarie Event Cinemas is right now, but it's long gone. And Blacktown's, I think, the only one standing. I think there's one up near Newcastle still at the Head and Greta drive-in. Maybe that's still around, but not a bad week for sci-fi. Can I just move on very quickly? I do want to mention, by the time this goes to where the one and only Dan Barrett has probably already done his introduction to Electric Dreams which will be tonight as we record this at the event cinemas at Brisbane City. So thank you very much for stepping up and doing that. It's good to have you as part of the festival family, Dan Barrett.
Yeah, so look, I'll be doing that in about 6.5 hours from now. And look, it's all been written up here.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't prepare anything. No one's prepared anything for this festival. Big sci-fi week. Netflix dropped the Rebel Moon trailer, which I thought was pretty exciting. A lot of extended footage from that. Dune 2 has been bumped to 2024 as we record this. Just news broke this morning. And you're leading off your reviews with a pretty impressive bit of Disney Plus sci-fi Star Wars action. So it's a good week for the sci-fi nuts out there.
It stinks.
Simon, you just mentioned it. I will probably just dive right in. I'm going to talk about the brand new Disney Plus TV program. It's based on a property called Star Wars. Star War? I don't know. I'm not that familiar with it. Folks,
I'll Google
it's
it.
Called Ahsoka.
War is inevitable. One must destroy in order to create. We are no Jedi.
I started hearing whispers of Thrawn's return as heir to the Empire.
What happens when we find Thrawn?
Power. Such as you've never dreamed.
All right, Simon. The way this usually works is I'm like, hey, Simon, have you heard of this program? And you're like, never heard of it until it turned up on the run sheet. Then I explain what it is, and you're like, oh, okay, this sounds kind of interesting. And then 4 months later, you say, hey, I watched that program you mentioned. And then you say you quite liked it. I'm like, you should have done that four months ago. But you still haven't watched The Sopranos yet, so whatever. So that's usually how this goes as a conversation. But you know what Ahsoka is. You know what Star Wars is.
Now, I'm very excited for Star Wars Ahsoka, not least of which because it features Rosario Dawson, who's one of my favorite actresses. So I'm keen to hear what you have to say.
Well, this is it. So the reason I do this little diatribe at the beginning is to talk about the idea of pre-awareness, because the conversation surrounding this program, but also it's something that frustrates me with almost everything that I see in terms of sort of nerd adjacent properties around the place, is the idea that, oh, in order to watch this thing, here's the other 12 things you need to have watched beforehand. Okay. And this is a really simple, listicle, link bait sort of thing that you find a lot of publications do around the place. You used to see it mostly on the sort of cheaper end of town, your Screen Crushes and that kind of thing. But you started to see it more and more with your Varieties and your THRs and your other pensky big branded media sites. It's a real big frustration of mine, because the reality is, every single one of these things where Hollywood has pumped in, hundreds upon hundreds of million dollars into it, they're not going to make it so that you have to have watched 3,500 episodes of a specific animated series that you may or may not have ever heard of before in order to watch their new thing. It's just not structured that way. It's not built that way at all. And so it frustrates me that there's a lot of people that feel that these big properties are really alienating to fans if you've never read the other stuff or seen the other shows leading into it. Because the reality is, you don't need to have read anything. You don't need to have seen anything. You can just watch stuff. And people have a preperceived idea. I remember my wife coming along with me, one of the rare times she's come to see a Star Wars thing, and she saw Rogue One, which is a film where you actually don't really need to have seen Star Wars stuff beforehand. They're all new characters. They're all doing new stuff. I mean, you get a bit of a squeal at the end because it links right up to the fourth Star Wars film, which is really the first one. Spoiler, come on, grown-ups here. So look, you certainly probably needed that for the end, but for the majority of the characters in it, it was all very fresh and you didn't need to know anything. But she commented afterwards that she just kind of felt like she didn't know the backstories in these characters and it was confusing. And I'm like, well, I didn't either, because they're all new characters. But it's that perception that you needed to know more, and that's what kind of throws it. So
you put this in a very eloquent way during the week as part of your newsletter, and I totally agreed with you. And as I started to see things pop up, the 15 things you need to know about Ahsoka before watching it, and look out for these 30 Easter eggs in Ahsoka for the fans and all that sort of stuff, I'm like, no, that's not how I want to watch this kind of show. I'm just going to dive in and enjoy it for what it is. So I this is something that I don't often say on this podcast. I agree with you.
But look, this is the thing. It makes watching this stuff unfun. And it's fun. It should be fun. So I sat down watching this, and the reality with Ahsoka is that a whole bunch of characters in it are characters that are from the Clone Wars animated series, which you can find on Disney Plus, or the Rebels animated series on Disney Plus. Now, I'll be honest, I've seen like maybe the first 7 or 8 episodes of the Clone Wars cartoon, which is where Ahsoka's first introduced as a character. I've seen that. I've seen there was those Mandalorian episodes like a season or two ago where Ahsoka made her live action debut played by Rosario Dawson. I have seen that. I've never watched Rebels. I haven't seen most of Clone Wars, which most of the stuff in this that relates to Clone Wars came after I stopped watching. Okay.
Yep.
But the thing is, so there's a lot of people in this talking about how, oh, you know, it's so confusing to anyone who has watched those things. You need to have seen that stuff. I haven't seen most of that stuff, and I was perfectly fine. Okay, there's a couple of characters where I'm sure that if you'd seen those cartoons, it resonates a little bit more, but you're told enough information up front. Okay, so here's what the show actually is, and let's, you know, treat it as though it's just this. Like, you don't need to have seen other stuff. It's the same way as in Star Wars, the original Star Wars, 1977, there's a whole sequence with Obi-Wan Kenobi talking about the Clone Wars and what a great soldier or, warrior, whatever your father was. Like, it's all just backstory, and I've actually just told you enough in that movie. You don't need to have, traveled 30 years into the future to have seen, like, the prequel movies. Like, that wasn't necessary.
I'm sold, sister. You've got me.
Yeah. So it's the same situation here in Ahsoka. Basically, you've got Ahsoka. She was a young girl that was studying to become a Jedi. Something went awry. She stopped trying to become a Jedi. Okay, she was tied to Anakin Skywalker, which through pop culture we know was Darth Vader. So that's probably enough information you need to know as to why she stopped being a Jedi. When your master is suddenly like a big evil dude, like, you probably back away from things. It's why we keep stopping this podcast every so often. We're like, I can't work for Dan anymore. You know, he's got all those aspirations of global domination.
Exactly right, yeah.
Yeah, galactic domination. So you've got her as a main character, now played as an adult by Rosario Dawson. Very charming, but I look at her under all of her makeup and her big sort of head dress of wig type thing that she's got on, and I wonder, this could just be a cartoon. It really could be. Then you've got Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who plays a general of some description, who's there is a hologram in quite a bunch of scenes in that first episode, in green paint in the first and second episode, which both dropped on Disney Plus. Basically,
have I ever been open about my adoration for Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
You have, and so I was trying to avoid that creepiness.
Yeah, my wife and I have agreed that she's my whole pass. She's my movie wife, Mary Elizabeth Winstead. So, hey, Mary Elizabeth, if you're watching, I mean, I know you're not allowed, I'm not allowed to actually refer to you in any way or go within 5 kilometers of you, but
yeah,
you know, here we are.
Look, I think it's a pretty safe bet that Fiona's made on that one. So, she's in it. Basically, you can sort of look at her going, oh, you know, she's just the co-worker friend. Like, I don't know if that character's been in the other stuff before. Maybe it has. Where it gets a little bit more dicey is they do have this other character who's the third one, which is an actress that I don't really know from anything. Maybe she's in stuff. I'm not sure. Her name's Sabine Wren, being the character. And apparently she's from the Rebels cartoon, played in real life here in Flesh and Blood by Natasha Liu Bordizzo. Now, her character seems a little bit more rooted in the Rebels TV program, and she's suddenly got a connection with, characters who have quite possibly died, but maybe not. I'm not sure. And I know it's a not because the character's listed as being alive in like later episodes, but I don't really know exactly what's going on there, but I figure it's going to give me that information when I get closer up and need to know more. And that's fine, because I was able to follow this. I was able to follow it through the really poorly rendered fight scenes at the beginning, where it was clearly shot on a soundstage with the that wall of screen that they use. What do they call it? It's like the Edge.
The software is Unreal Engine for most.
Yeah, but not the software, but the screen itself. It's
the LED screen.
The source, is that what they call it? I'm not sure. It's got a name. But basically, it's one of these 360-degree video things that exist around that are able to change the backgrounds and have actors performing against real-world backgrounds as opposed to, like, add that in post. So
it looks worse than it did in Mandalorian, because that technology's been around. It was highlighted as being part of the Mandalorian's appeal.
Yeah, so look, that was kind of the thing. And in the Mandalorian, it looked a little bit fake, but it kind of became part of that world. There's times where they try to push the volume, that's what they call it. There's times that they try to push what they're able to achieve with the volume, and when they push it too far, that's when it starts to look a little bit shaky. But that said, they've, I think the technology's improving a little bit more. So like there's some scenes where you can see that they're pushing it, but it just seems a little bit more visually interesting than it does. But when it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. And there's certainly some very opening sequences in this one where it really just looks super fake and just uncomfortable. And also some of the because some of the villains in this are like robot warrior type things that are trying to, you know, get involved in fight scenes. And the special effects on those just look really shaky. And you look at that and think, well, why isn't this just the cartoon I'm watching? Like, why bother going to the effort of putting live action people into these CG background areas when most of it just looks like a cartoon anyway? And so that's the problem I have with this broadly as a program, just the visual conceptual nature of it. From a story perspective, the first episode is a bit confusing. There's a lot of information being leveled at you that you don't quite have enough grounding with. There's character motivations and full characters that are just a bit awkward. They're very much Obi-Wan talking about the Clone Wars, but going for like 45 minutes.
Wow.
Once you get past episode one and get into episode two, this show is magnificent and huge fun. In the way that I really, really liked that... Andor was really grounded and dealt with the politics and the dirt and muck of the Star Wars universe. This plays around with Jedis. It's very much, it's lots of pew, pew, pew. It's lots of lightsabers and it's lots of chase scenes, which sometimes are less well rendered than others, but I like the ambition. I like the spaceships taking off and the chases of like one ship chasing after another one, trying to get a tracker onto it. I like watching Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Hera Syndulla, like flying her ship and talking to her, not an R2 unit, but like another bucket of bolts that's flying with her, having those conversations. It is just classic, silly Star Wars realized as this series, great fun. And once I've started leaning into that, I feel that's where the rest of the series is going. We've done the hard work with that first episode. The rest is just pure fun delivery. I'm into this one. I think it's from the two episodes. First episode, wasn't so sure. Second one, it delivers. I'm gung-ho.
So happy to hear that. That is really good to know. Are you prepared at this stage, even having only seen the first couple of episodes, but could we sort of live create a list here of your favorite Disney Plus Star Wars properties when you factor in
Andor, Disney Plus Star Mando, Wars properties?
Yeah. Yeah, like the TV series that have been made in the Star Wars, whether it's Mando, whether it's Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, the other ones that have come along.
Okay.
Have you got a best five yet?
We can do this in terms of live action because I think this is the fifth one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, number one on the list, Andor. I think it's exceptional television. Star Wars or otherwise, it's just, I think, fantastic.
We all
agree. Andor. Great. Mandalorian, sometimes it's got a few low points here and there, but by and large, I think it does pretty well for itself. It's, you know, it's good TV. Number three is probably Ahsoka, from what I've seen from the first two episodes. It could go pear-shaped from here. It may continue to soar. I think it's going to go on the up. Like, I've got a lot of faith around this one. It seems pretty good. Okay?
Yep.
Number four on the list is, oh gosh, and here we start getting into the Drek a little bit, probably that Obi-Wan live-action show. There were certainly elements of that I really quite liked, but it didn't really hold together particularly well. And then the last one is The Book of Boba Fett, because that show was just fucking awful, with the exception of the two episodes, which were just episodes of The Mandalorian.
All right. So without having seen Ahsoka, but know that I'm going to be on board for this because everything about it looks like I'm going to dig it, I'm going to stick with your top three, but I'm going to switch your bottom two around. I did not care very much for Obi-Wan, and I did quite like a few episodes of the Boba Fett one. So just those bottom two, I'm going to swap around, but I think we're otherwise in agreement. And I think the internet is too. The internet often agrees with us.
Yeah, sure.
All right, okay.
So RottenTomatoes.com says otherwise, but we'll go with your hypothesis here.
I'm so vague on this because of my crazy festival week. Are these hour-longs or half-hour-longs? I don't even know what I'm watching.
Like all the Star Wars live-action stuff, it's like 45 minutes, 33 minutes. It kind of bounces around a bit. But like I'm all for that. I actually saw like a Screen Rant or one of those terrible like news websites who were complaining about, oh, this has got the same problem as all the other Star Wars stuff, lack of consistency with runtimes. And I'm like, what's a streaming program? It doesn't actually need to adhere to a time slot. Like, I like that the story is just kind of whatever they think it should be for that week. Like, that's fun.
If you're
like,
getting paid for column inches that complain, if your big complaint going away from the Star Wars universe is run times, then wow, dream
big. Yeah.
Okay, so Ahsoka is on Disney Plus. First two episodes up there now. It drops every other Wednesday, I think, from what I read this morning. I got along to see one of the most talked about films of the year. It's called The Sound of Freedom.
I don't think I can do this job, Tim. As soon as I lay down, all you see are those kids' faces. How long you been doing this?
12 years.
How do you do it?
It is the fastest growing international crime network that the world has ever seen. It has already passed the illegal arms trade.
Sorry, Simon, can I just clarify here? When you say it's one of the most talked about films of the year, are you talking about for the content in the movie?
From a several different angles. Yes, because yeah. of the content. B, because there's been a lot of controversy about exactly where the box office gross has come from. It's upwards of $170 million in the US now, but Angel Studios have done some bookkeeping magic to maybe, well, it's clever marketing. They've sold blocks of tickets and asked you to pass those on to people to come and watch the film. And that, I guess that works. It's played the system well. Let me just tell you what Sound of Freedom is. This is based on a true story. It is the story of a man named Tim Ballard, who was a federal officer working for the Department of Defense. He became very involved in human traffic, with particular emphasis on child trafficking and the child sex underground industry that exists. Now, what happens here is that this true story has been taken by Angel Studios, turned into, and I'm going to say, a pretty good sort of drama, a true life drama, and then it has been picked up from both sides of the political spectrum as either a fairly right-wing, almost QAnon-y type rant about how the child trafficking is what the left are trying to hide and protect the government from. And the left side has come out and said it's a total QAnon rant that just supports a whole lot of terrible right-wing stories and conspiracy theories that aren't particularly true. The truth of the matter is it kind of falls right in the middle. The film itself, I got to say, is exceptionally well made. It's a really good looking film. Jim Caviezel is pretty terrific in the lead role as Ballard, and the portrayal of the young children who are trafficked around everywhere is quite sensitively done. And the young actress Crystal Aparicio, who plays the young girl who becomes Ballard's focus and his sort of main aim to get out of the child sex ring, is she's terrific in this. Other moments get a bit heavy-handed in the way they tell their message, and Ballard was a devout Christian, and Caviezel has a couple of lines in the movie which make you cringe a bit and sort of think, yeah, it is leaning a bit towards that that sort of far-right ideology. But I mean, we can't be too precious about this. A lot of films lean very much towards the left as well, and we tend to accept that because of our beliefs and the people we are, Dan. But the movie sits pretty comfortably in a position where it can, yes, lean towards a devout Christian way of life, but still be a really entertaining movie without being deeply set in right-wing sort of far-right notions of conspiracy theory or dog whistling, I guess you could say. I got to say, I'm only an hour away as we record this from having seen the movie. I watched it here at home on the big screen, and I was pleasantly surprised. We kind of spent the first half hour having a few sort of pinko lifty jabs at what was going on the screen. And there are sort of drop-ins where they don't just eat at a burger stand, they eat at America Burger Stand, and there's, you know, often American flags in the background. So there is that element to it. But it kind of shut me up at the hour mark. I was into the story and into the performances and fairly content with the way the film told the story. So Sound of Freedom has made its way into Australian cinemas through Icon under Mel Gibson's film banner, and
I guess that was kind of bound to happen, but it's probably worth a look. It's one of the better movies I've seen this year. Has my thoughts on it sort of swayed you at all?
Honestly, I wasn't really quite listening to your thoughts, but I'll listen back on the... I mean, my general thoughts on it is that from all that I've heard, it's not particularly a great movie, but it sounds perfectly fine. I think it's going to be just a big screen version of like Law and Order SVU. Like, I don't think it really aspires to anything sort of stronger than that. But, like, that's fine as well. I actually don't mind that there's a film kind of like that, and I'll certainly watch it. I think it's sort of the right-wing QAnon aspects of it all. I think it's just been a bit of a marketing push from the people at... Is it Angel Distribution? Is that the name of the company?
Angel Studios, yeah.
Angel Studios, yeah. And that probably leads into the other thing I was going to say, which was the original intention with this podcast this week was I was going to do a bit of a Angel Studios double feature. Okay, in that their big movie of the moment is The Sound of Freedom, but they've got a big TV series as well, which they've had since 2017. It's a show called The Chosen. Now, this is a show which is, it's about some guy named Jesus, or Jesus, I don't know, it's one or the other.
Yes.
But anyway, this is a show which they were making as a web program, so you could access it through a website, and the business model was basically produce a big-budget, Jesus-based TV program that looks and feels a bit like Game of Thrones, not quite with the budget, but, you know, suddenly Game of Thrones sort of adjacent, and then sell a whole bunch of merchandise and then try to sell the program to other services afterwards. So they've since sold it to Netflix. You can watch season one at Netflix. You can watch seasons 1 through 3 at the chosen.tv website. They've just sold it to the US network, the CW. I know other streamers in Australia have been looking at it as well, thinking whether or not they want to get it. And so that's...
hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's doing good. Like, reviews are generally sort of, you know, fairly sort of supporting. Like, I don't think anyone's gaga for it, but it's, you know, interesting enough. And look, I'm probably going to take a look into this on the podcast in the next 2 or 3 weeks sometime. I'll get to it. But... instead of doing that, I want to talk about a movie that's playing in a cinema that I knew you would have overlooked, but I know there's a bit of a market for it, so I wanted to give it a bit of a chat. It's an anime film, Simon, called The First Slam Dunk.
The First Slam Dunk.
I would presume, Simon, that you're not across this at all.
Well, you'd be wrong, my friend. I actually know of this film and watched the trailer for it only a few short moments ago when I saw it on my run sheet and I hadn't heard of it previously.
Okay, well, I'm proven wrong, obviously. So look, I'll admit I'm not that familiar with Slam Dunk as a manga or an anime series. Originally, it was a manga serial that ran in, I think it's called Shonen Jump. It's a magazine that has like serialized manga stories in it. It's then been collected into its own series of books, and I've seen that series of books around for years and years around the place. So I certainly knew this existed. And what I've been particularly interested by in terms of manga, which I'm not a big manga reader by any means, but my understanding is that there's just a whole bunch of obviously sort of fantasy, sci-fi, action books, which you'd kind of assume. But there's also lots of subgenres of things where there's some series which just about like culinary crafts. So there's entire books about like, you know, the creation of sushi. There's things like this, which is a relationship basketball drama. There's lots of other relationship dramas playing around with lots of LGBT relationships. And it's a very progressive, interesting delivery mechanism for stories, and it is very broad and not necessarily the stuff that you typically think is what manga is all about. It really is a much broader tent than that. This exists as one of those sorts of things. This is a human relationship drama about basketball players. This is something which ran the 90s as a manga. It then ended up becoming a anime series. So I was doing some reading up because, again, I'm not really across this at all, but there was a TV series that ran for like 101 episodes, I think it was, like maybe about 20 years back. So it's certainly a known property. This is its own standalone movie, okay, which you can go and see in cinemas right now. It's only playing for like the next week, but if box office on it's okay, like it'll probably get an extended run, I'm sure. It'll be on your streaming services sooner than you know it, though. the story behind this one is that you got this young guy named Ryosa. He is a, I'm going to say like maybe about a 10-year-old boy when the story first starts. And the story is basically his father's died. His older brother promises he's going to look after him. His older brother is a star basketball player. And the idea is he wants to train his brother to also have some pretty serious basketball skills. And it's about like really pushing this kid to, you know, excel, push his body as much as possible. And
classic,
you can
cut sports drama setup.
Exactly. And so the mother is like emotionally just distraught and not really necessarily involved in their lives because, you know, she's gone through some trauma, and the older brother feels that he needs to step up. Within the first couple of minutes, though, you find out about the second tragedy that's befallen the family, which is that the older brother also meets an unfortunate demise. So this younger boy is sort of left without his mentor, left with a passion for basketball. Okay, but it's, you know, he's not very good at it, is basically the thing. So you've got that storyline happening. But then you've also got this other storyline happening, which is about a basketball game that's taking place. It's much older boys, and it's just the basketball game. It's these characters confronting their various sort of barriers from becoming like a great basketball player, all within this one game. Okay, so like you got this guy who's a bit of a hothead. He refuses to pass to like his teammates. And like within like the, you know, how long does the basketball quarter go for? 20 minutes? We'll say 20 minutes.
You're the sport guy.
I'm pretty sure 20 minutes. So within this like 20 minute first quarter, like he overcomes that and becomes someone who passes. So it's a little bit ridiculous in terms of the idea that all these guys are suddenly becoming better players through the course of this one game. But if you're willing to go with the dramatic conceits and the fact that a movie can stretch out quarters and minutes and seconds and track them and play around with time, you can kind of get away with that. What you realize, what you cotton onto within a couple of minutes is that this isn't just any basketball game. This is the young kid, as an older teenager who's like involved in this big game. And so,
you start seeing... cotton onto that, because I kind of cottoned into it as part of your review. So.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of it. It's not a big surprise. But you realize it's a few minutes in, going, oh, so that guy is that guy, but he's got a different haircut now, and oh my God. Anyway, basically, it's a pretty stock standard sports drama, okay, but told in an anime fashion, which means that in the way that it adheres to all the expected tropes, which is that I think we can all guess who's going to win at the very end. I think we can all guess that it's going to come down to one final basketball shot. Like, it's every basketball thing you've ever seen before. And yes, Teen Wolf is a better movie. Let's just put that on the table right now. It's a better film, just like how Teen Wolf 2 is a better film than Raging Bull. It's just a fact.
Jeez, we're going to get around screenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com. So anyway, I love a good sport, you've got that aspect, but Simon.
Yeah, what I was just going to say was, what the benefit of watching this is versus a lot of the other sports movies we've seen is that it is animated. At the very beginning, I thought that it's got a bit of a stilted animation style for some of the more human drama elements. And that was really off-putting to me. And I was like, ah, oh, this feels really cheap. Like, I don't know, this is particularly good. But I could actually see that actually really was for style as opposed to like the actual animation budgets or anything sort of imposed there. Like, this is a animated film where all the scenes on the basketball court actually do get hugely exciting. There's lots of rotoscope taking place. Like, it's a really interesting animation style. And things get fast and then like super slow-mo, Zack Snyder style at moments. Like, it really adheres to all the things you can do in animation you can't do in live action without it being just ridiculous and unwatchable. It's fun. It's a good full 2-hour movie. It's like 122 minutes or something. It's definitely a bit of fat that could be trimmed from it, but it's a good watch. What I will say as a major criticism of the film is that if you're going to run a film where you've got two Lost style stories where you're really sort of learning about the backstory of one of the main characters, like interspersed throughout the rest of the film, like if you're going to do that, the narrative structure needs to be that basketball game at the end is about that character that you're following through the rest of the movie. But that character kind of gets lost a little bit in the basketball game, and it actually becomes about this other character and his progression as a person. It's like, well, where's the narrative through? Like, I couldn't follow that through line comfortably enough. But outside of that, it's a pretty good time at the cinema. I saw it on a Thursday afternoon at about 1 o'clock. You wouldn't expect to be many people in there, and there certainly wasn't. But there were there was a sort of guy in his mid-20s. There was a young teenager who brought along his grandfather. And like, I wasn't sure that grandfather would really be into it. It seemed like the sort of polite thing you do for your grandkid. But like, I heard that guy through the movie, he was laughing and having a great time and cheering along. And if it's instilling that from that guy, I think most people are going to have a fun time with the movies.
Have you seen it? And on Variety during the week, on the Variety website, there came up an interview with one of the writers or producers of The Simpsons talking about their manga episode. Now, has that aired yet, or is that coming up?
I've no idea anything about this. So,
yeah, now apparently they've created like a Simpsons version in the manga style. They've done an ultra realistic take on all the characters in there. It's been influenced by the Death Note villain as well. He apparently comes and talks to.
Sure.
I think it might be Krusty as that. But, and they've actually employed, like, for that episode, they used all the manga artists that create some of the best manga in the world. So I didn't read or listen to the article. I just saw I did a skim through it. So I'm going to check out my Disney Plus subscription and see if it's up there at the moment.
If that is Treehouse of Horror, like, that could be for this year. And so it's coming out like in 2 months' time.
Well, I think it's the one they're pushing for an Emmy nomination.
If that's the case, then it would have been last year's.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I figured. All right. Interesting. What's it called? The First Slam Dunk movie?
The First Slam Dunk.
Cool. All right. I'll be checking that out.
Yeah, and look, pretty good. It's a surprisingly good big screen experience. And just for another bit of trivia, sorry, this is something I was reading up from that great source, Wikipedia. Just talking in terms of the success of this movie as well. As I said, this has been a anime series before. Like, you know, it's not like it's a new property to Japan at all. But this film has made so far $257.5 million worldwide, which makes it one of the biggest releases of the year. Sure. Okay. But, you know, certainly overlooked by certain Western film critics on this podcast.
Not interested. No.
It's the fifth highest grossing anime of all time. Okay. And that's in Japan.
Huge.
Yeah. In Japan, the film debuted at number one. And its first 2 days, it made like $9.5 million. So I guess that's pretty good for Japan, I'm guessing. The only film that's really this is South Korea here. The only film that sort of performed better is like Suzume, which is that anime film I talked about a few months ago on the podcast. And look, anime is not really something that I watch a whole lot of, but increasingly I'm finding that it's getting a stronger presence in cinemas. And also, like, frankly, I just think that the quality of animation is becoming really quite good. It's kind of what I've always wanted from American animation, and so rarely gets seen on the big screen. So I feel that that's changing. And also, I kind of feel that anime is becoming a much bigger product category on services like Netflix. And as that becomes a bit more mainstream, I think it's going to become a much bigger part of just mainstream cinema going. So watch this space.
I tell you what, I wish I'd gone and seen that movie instead of seeing Haunted Mansion. Throw the clip.
I should warn you, before you step inside the house, this could change the course of your entire life.
I'm not afraid of a couple ghosts.
You say that now.
So, Simon, I mean, it sounds like we're about to hear a negative review here, but I'm a bit disappointed because I was kind of interested in this one because it's Justin Simeon, and he's the guy that made the film Dear White People, which is really, really quite good. And then also made the Dear White People TV series, which is almost as good on Netflix.
Okay, so I'm excited too. I went into this knowing that, yes, it is another Disney studio adaptation of a theme park ride, which in and of itself isn't a bad thing. The first Pirates of the Caribbean movie was a lot of fun and a pretty terrific piece of filmmaking as well. And it's not like they haven't sort of pulled that off to varying degrees of success down the track as well. So Haunted Mansion had a lot of elements to it that I was quite excited about. The director, as you mentioned, has done some good work before, and he was very open about going into this film trying to emulate films like Ghostbusters or have that sort of horror comedy element that is hard to pull off, but when it works really well. He has got a good cast around him. It tells the story of a young man played by Lakeith Stanfields who is really down on his luck just doing historical tours of New Orleans, finds himself caught up in a haunted house mystery when he visits Rosaria Dawson and her young son who have bought this mansion but who find themselves carrying around poltergeist activity wherever they go. Ghosts have been attaching themselves to whoever comes into the house. And that happens to Lakeith Stanfield's character. It also happens to Owen Wilson's Father Kent character. It also happens to Danny DeVito's character. And then when Tiffany Haddish turns up as the medium, it happens to her. So you find this very disparate element all connected under this big special effects heavy haunted mansion setting. You expect a lot of fun. You don't get it. This is a film that drags really terribly through the midsection. There's some repetitive moments where ghosts pop out and scare you, or where the characters go to other planes and other realms to try to solve the mystery of what's going on in the haunted mansion. By all accounts, there's a lot of quote-unquote Easter eggs. God, I hate that term so much. That people who've been on the ride will see as part of the set design and the special effects in the movie. So if you've done the Haunted Mansion ride, you've got that to look forward to. But otherwise, it's a lot of really wasted opportunities, this film. For about the 10th time on this podcast, I'm going to say Rosaria Dawson, and she is a wonderful talent, but she's reduced to a whole lot of reaction shots in this. Lakeith Stanfield is a fine actor. He's not a comedian. There's a really sort of dark heart to his performance that is probably notable as an acting piece, but really drags the fun of the film down. Same goes for Owen Wilson. He has a few laughing moments, but not enough. It's all kind of saved by Danny DeVito to some extent, who ups the mood and the beat of the film when he needs to. But there's just not enough fun stuff going on in this for the movie to qualify for its 2 and a bit hour running time, which just dragged on terribly. The one upside is that it features an entirely unrecognizable Jared Leto. So it's got that going for it. You don't have to sort of stare into his vacant dead face. So he plays the villain, the Hatbox Ghost. So what you have here is something that promised a lot, and a lot of talented people not doing their best work. So Haunted Mansion, actually getting a bit of a head start on this one. It's out next week, next Thursday the 31st in cinemas, but it's a fairly busy week at the movies next week, so I thought I'd get a bit of a jump and warn people off it.
A busy week at the movies. What a phrase you hear so rarely these days.
It's very true. I know. God, it was quiet last night at the movies. There was no one there. But anyway, that's my review, Haunted Mansion. Do you remember the old Eddie Murphy one? I vaguely remember it as being something that was kind of a big deal in the day, but
I remember the poster.
What higher praise for a film? I remember the poster. Look, I think we're done with reviews.
Look, I can only speak to my truth.
Speak to my truth. That's beautifully said. So I think we're done with reviews, Dan. Let's get on to the intermission. And I think we're going to start a few serious arguments over the internet with what we're about to say.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's intermission time.
Simon, some people have accused me of being a contrarian before.
Yes.
Yeah. Present company.
Not least of which being me.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And here's the thing. I'm just not going to follow along with just the general consensus. Like, you know, I can say I like Star Wars. Like, you know, that's pretty commonly beloved. Like, it's not like I'm just completely outside of what everyone else is thinking. But I'm also going to hold true to, like, what I actually believe to be true. I'm going to march to my own drum. I'm going to hold to my truth. And so with that in mind, occasionally, I find myself getting in some choppy waters where people are like, how could you not want to just go and see a Barbie movie? What's wrong with you? And so, like, I'll give my reason, and people are just like, oh, you're just being a contrarian. Like, why do you have such unpopular opinions? And so I thought to myself, why don't we do that as an entire segment? What are our, like, unpopular opinions? What are the opinions we have, Simon, that are going to get us cancelled? So in this, what will be the last episode of the Screen Watching Podcast, Simon and I are putting our movie opinions on the table. We're going to say, and we're sticking only to movies here, we'll do TV unpopular opinions when we revive this podcast post-cancellation. So in a couple of weeks' time.
I didn't know we were going to get the podcast cancelled. I might have to up my ante a bit here, but
and I will be cancelled, which means that there's no podcast.
Sure.
It kind of flows.
I'm all for that, of course. We do occasionally form opinions about films that are counter to accepted thinking, and that if we aired them publicly, they could only damage our reputations. And so that is what we're going to do here.
to some degree. I mean, we can't paddle too. We're two middle-aged, middle-class white guys, so we aren't exactly society's rebels, you know. But it's what we do, and here we are. So let's give it a go. You want to kick this off with your first unpopular movie opinion?
Yeah, and keep in mind, this is, we know that we are going to get cancelled and that we are not going to be popular in the streets. So with this in mind, I also just give myself a bit of insurance here.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Fake moustache. No one will know that's me.
Okay. First of all, everyone's going to know it's you. First of all, I didn't have our video on. I was looking at the running sheet. So when I clicked back to why it was quite there, I'd come back to see you with a big woolly caterpillar on your top lip. That is the funniest thing I've ever seen. All right, good. Gee, I hope you're watching this on our YouTube or Spotify channels, everyone, because Dan really is going full Super Mario with this.
Excuse me, Super Mario? No. I've decided, and sorry, for this, I am going to put on a voice so that I'm fully disguised properly. And some people may say, Dan, you're doing the Super Mario voice. No, I'm doing Jared Leto from that House of Gucci movie. So, Simon, this is my opinions on the movies.
You're going to do the whole segment like that? All right, fine.
Okay, maybe not. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to start just a bit of a softball that I'm throwing out there to, you know, warm up the waters a little bit. Sure. I should stick with one metaphor, shouldn't I? Okay, I'm putting it out there. Galaxy Quest, not a funny movie, not a good movie. Why has it got the fan support behind it? I don't understand why this is such a beloved movie by so many, because it is just not very good. I do not care for this movie. It's terribly cast with Tim Allen in the main role. Okay. Unwatchable. The cinematography on it doesn't match the content of the thing. It's too glossy. It's too schmick looking. It should look like a cheap indie movie, and it doesn't. It's too much. I don't care for it.
Wow, that you have come out all guns blazing to have a go at Galaxy Quest, one of the most beloved comedies of the last 30 odd years.
I mean, comedies, if you want to buy into the idea it's funny, which I do not.
Oh, my goodness me. Okay, Dan Barry, you've set a very high benchmark with your I don't care for Galaxy Quest lead off. That's pretty. I'm going to see your Galaxy Quest battering, and I'm going to raise you. Dances with Wolves is a better film than Goodfellas. Now, let me explain.
Simon.
So there was a great deal of controversy. Whenever people say that the Oscars are out of touch with society and the Oscars are out of touch with what the fans love, they usually point to two very specific years. First of all, 1980, when Robert Redford's Ordinary People beat Raging Bull. I'm on the fence with that one. Raging Bull's a great film, so those Ordinary People can go either way. Then in 1990, Kevin Costner's Dances with Wolves reignited the love of the American Western on the big screen. Everyone fell in love with it. But the general opinion was, and has only grown over time, that the better film that year was Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas. Now, not only am I fine with Dances with Wolves beating Goodfellas for the Best Picture Oscar, I am going to go on record as saying I don't think Goodfellas is even Martin Scorsese's best film. I think it comes about fifth or sixth in the lineup of movies that Martin Scorsese should be remembered for. So there you go. I've said it. Dances with Wolves is a better film than Goodfellas, deserved the Best Picture Oscar, and Goodfellas is a wildly overrated film in the Scorsese oeuvre.
So, look, I think it's important, and this isn't really going to be a surprise to anyone that's listened to this podcast before. We don't do a whole lot of pre-planning, and I had no idea what you were going to say just then. Okay? With that in mind, I'm just going to scratch off my list here saying that Goodfellas is an overrated movie and not one of Martin Scorsese's best.
No way. Did you write that down?
It's right here.
Oh, my God. That's me. There we go. Look at us agreeing. Who'd have thought? Two middle-aged white guys.
Agree. No, but middle-aged white guys love Goodfellas.
They really do. They absolutely do. So,
I will say, part of the reason why I'm not so into it is only because I really saw the movie sort of, you know, in the last maybe like 6-7 years, something like that. By that point, I feel that a lot of elements of that film that made it feel so fresh and original when it was first released have been aped by other movies. Not necessarily in a negative way, but you look at things like, say, Boogie Nights, a movie that I absolutely adore. It took so many things stylistically from Goodfellas.
Yep.
Okay. And so when
and
I think.
Not, and I,
yeah.
And I want to be clear, I'm not bagging Goodfellas. Goodfellas is a great, great film. It was the second best movie of 1990 as far as I was concerned, and many people disagree that it was the best movie. I just think that I was fine with Oscar's choice that year.
Sorry, when you say that other people disagree and think that there was another movie that was better, you're talking about the release of Warren Beatty's Dick Tracy film?
Love Dick Tracy. Should have been amongst the running for Best Picture that year. It's a great film.
Is that on your list of unpopular opinions?
Hey, I've got my four, and I'm not going to even mention Steven Spielberg's 1941. So that's we've dodged that bullet. What's number two for you?
Yeah, you've already been cancelled for that one. I'm going to put this out here and say Lethal Weapon 1, Lethal Weapon 2, Lethal Weapon 3, still hugely entertaining and very watchable despite Mel Gibson's involvement. Also see Air America.
Yes, I've got no sort of problem with that. They are entertaining. A lot of what the now toxic Mel Gibson did back in his day as one of the biggest movie stars in the world are really enjoyable, exciting, fun films. So not so much Bird on a Wire. It's got some ugly moments. But
I didn't have that in my list.
No, I know.
I don't think Bird on a Wire was ever really a good movie, but I do think the first three Lethal Weapons really pretty good. And the fourth one, like, it's certainly not like a great movie, but it's pretty watchable still. Still kind of nice seeing them out there. And Air America, like, I think it was pretty well panned when that was first released, but I've always found it pretty entertaining. I saw it as a kid and it's always stuck with me as something that I've enjoyed. I know they're pretty good. And I appreciate that in this sort of day and age of hating Mel Gibson and ACAB and all these other issues. Lethal Weapon films, not necessarily considered to be particularly cool. And that TV series really did test the limits of the IP to a certain degree. Did you remember there was a TV series? Most people won't.
I don't. What are you talking about? What's ACAB? What did you say then?
Well, I was talking about the Lethal Weapon TV series.
Right.
Which most people have forgotten existed, mercifully so. But then there's ACAB. Hashtag ACAB, Simon.
I don't know what that is. Can we say what that is on there? Will that get us cancelled?
Why don't you talk? Like, you got to talk to the kids more. So this is part of the All Lives Matter, like, All Cops Are Bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah, ACAB, All Cops Bastards. It's an acronym.
Oh, ACAB. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Mm. Anyway.
All right, you ready for my next one?
No, but go ahead.
I'm taking a deep breath. Screen Australia is ruining the Australian film industry.
Mamma mia, Simon!
Yeah. Screen Australia seems to have an agenda at the moment where you've got to tick the boxes of significant social issues to get your film
What? Simon, you're stepping right up to it. Do you want to use the W word? Is that what you're going to say, Simon? Is that where we're at?
I am not going to use the W word.
Now
I do want to qualify that by saying I am 100% on board with the changing narrative of film and in being more inclusive and progressive. People who know me know that to be true. But there are a great many films that are funded and passed through the Screen Australia system that seem to have nothing but I really should have thought this through before I started talking. They seem to have nothing but that agenda in mind. And it is costing us and this industry box office takings. Our share is at one of the lowest points in the film in our film history. Our films are not getting, and even in doing this, even in making these films, they're not getting picked up by festivals around the world, or they're not being lauded as great examples of this kind of new progressive narrative. And I think Screen Australia has a lot to answer for in terms of where this industry has fallen short in the last 5 years. I just got a look from my wife as in, really? You're going to go on record with that? I said, yes, I am. That's what this segment's all about. So there we go. Screen Australia has undone much of the good work of the last 40 years of the Australian film industry. Let's move on.
Whoa.
This is meant to be unpopular movie opinion. And that's number two. Wait till you see my next two.
Okay. Some people may save the best for last. Not me. I'm putting it out there and... Okay. Take a moment. The best Police Academy movie is number 4, Citizens on Patrol.
Oh, wow. You know what?
Take a deep breath.
I am, Here I am dissing the national film sector, and you're weighing in on Police Academy 4. Oh, my God. This is going to backfire on me. All right, why do you love Police Academy 4?
Sorry, wait a sec, wait a sec. This is unpopular opinions. Is my opinion here popular with you? The answer to that is no. So, therefore, I've met the brief.
Sure. Yeah, brief's met.
Number 4 is the pure distillation of everything the Police Academy movies have done until then. But what's particularly amazing about this movie is when you've watched all the movies back to back, as I have, you'll find through number 1 through 4, there's a series of box checking they do, much like the wokesters over at Screen Australia.
I said that.
Much like Wokistan happening over there in Canberra. Are they Canberra-based or Sydney-based? It doesn't matter. Wokistan's a state of mind. Much like that, there's some box ticking that needs to happen, okay? There needs to be, look, I'll just pick out one example of the Police Academy movies. One of the staples is that there always needs to be a scene where usually, I can't think of the character's name now.
The Steve Guttenberg character?
No, not Mahoney. The guy who they're always going up against, at least in through 1, 3
G.
and four.
G.W. Bailey, the actor G.W. Bailey.
Who yeah, was the, so the character G.W. Yeah. Bailey plays.
The guy's okay. Head stuck in the horse's bottom in the first
one. Yeah, in the first one, yeah. I just kind of want to see Lassard, but it's not Lassard because that's the commandant. Anyway, the other guy. So anyway, there's always some sort of scene where he wants to know what's going on, and it's like, oh, where's everyone going? Why is there a secret meeting I need to go to? And then he'll be fed like an address, and he turns up, and it's the Blue Oyster Bar, and him and his offsider, suddenly find themselves dancing with some strapping men in biker outfits, and as an audience, we laugh and we chortle. Like, that's one of the things that happens in these movies. What's great is by the time they get to number 4, they've got all these boxes they need to tick. But instead of having a setup for all of them, everyone knows like what the setups are. So they dispense with the setups entirely. There's one scene where out of nowhere, those two police officers are just walking down a laneway, walk into a room, and they're in a Blue Oyster Bar dancing with like the mustachioed biker guys. Like they don't even come up with a pretense for them to suddenly end up there. They're just there. And we laugh because we know that's what you're supposed to do during those scenes in the Police Academy movies. That's why it's so great, Simon. It is so comedically in touch with what the IP is about that it doesn't even need to adhere to the rules of comedy or narrative. It just lets it breathe.
All right, that's great, Dan. Here I go with my next one.
Never ask why, Simon. Never ask why.
Dubbing foreign films should be banned. It's subtitles or it's nothing.
How's that an unpopular opinion? If anything, that's the popular opinion. And when you go counter to that.
No, and I am including in that this, we're in the early stages of the technology that's going to use AI to change the mouths and change the voices and do all of that in the world of streaming and possibly big screen releases. I would say that any indication that your foreign film has been dubbed and that fake voices has been put over the top of the national language of the film, from the nation from where the film came, that is a false thing to do and not honest, and it should be stopped. And subtitles or nothing for me.
So I would argue and say that in no way is that an unpopular opinion. If anything, you're adhering to the common discourse around subtitles. I would suggest, Simon, okay, what people say and what they do are two different things. I think a lot of people watch stuff with the dubbing, okay, even though they will actively say that they're against that in principle, which I find interesting. But I think
I don't think there should be an audio track.
Okay, that's fine. Most people agree with dubbing. You. I don't think that's an unpopular opinion. I think you've violated the entire concept of what we're doing here by bringing opinion to the table.
No, you said that even people who don't that say films shouldn't be dubbed often watch dubbed works on television. Yeah. I don't say don't have that option. There should not be an industry of people with voices that dub films. No.
And even people who watch the stuff would say that it shouldn't happen, but they still do it. In the same way, people are like, I shouldn't eat that much candy, but they still do it. You still sit there every night with a bag of chocolate bullets, raspberry flavored, and you eat them, and you know that you shouldn't be eating them.
That's
but then
very
you think,
specific
I enjoyed that bag, and there's a salted caramel Mars bar in the cupboard, and I know I shouldn't eat that as well, but I'm still going to. And you know you shouldn't, but you still do it. And you will tell your daughter, no, you're not going to have candy, okay? It's a once-a-week activity. It's not for you. You're not going to do it. I wouldn't do that. And then she goes to bed, and you just say, guzzling it away. You can't stop yourself.
But
that's what I'm saying,
Simon.
But if you
were to ban candy from your house, then that would not be an option to even have to consider. The candy would not be present to give you that option.
No,
but that's what I'm saying.
But the opinion, Simon, is still that it's bad, but people still do it. We're talking about unpopular opinions, not unpopular actions.
Well, okay.
Do as I say, not as I do.
This is a fierce debate. All right, let's move on. Have you replaced your anti-Goodfellas rant with a fourth one? Can you come up with one on the spot?
Okay. My final one. And this is something that I hold dearly. I may have dropped a replacement one in the middle there. See if you can pick which one it was.
Sure.
Putting it out there, Kate Blanchett, not for me.
You're kind of pressing all my buttons too. She's not for me either. I know I know that is unpopular opinion, but between the two of us, I'm right on board with that.
I mean, thank God no one's listening, but you know. Yeah, I don't care for her. I don't like her on-screen presence. I think she damages every movie she's in, every role that she's in. I don't like her, Simon. I don't want it. Not on my screen, thank you very much. Tar, I didn't like very much, and I think it's because she was Tar.
All right, I am going to...
Simon, I really love the movie Life Aquatic. There's only one thing I don't like about that movie. Out of all of its many flaws, there's one thing I don't like in it. It's Kate Blanchett.
I am less anti-Kate on screen because I did like Tar.
Is your wife still listening to this?
No. She's never listened to this podcast. and I loved Kate in what was the Woody Allen thing she did? Blue Sunshine, something like that. She was great in that she won the Oscar for, but her persona off screen is about as Sydney North Shore theatrical type. I got through NIDA and I'm adored as can be. That thing she did on the Graham Norton show where she sort of dissed on heavy metal fans and Mark, she was there with Margot Robbie and she said that other thing to the British comedian who came to Australia and worked in a call center and said, you came all the way to Australia just to work in the insurance industry. She comes across in the worst sort of snobbish manner. So I'm not as down on her on screen, but I am down on her in general.
Oh, look, I'd never attack a person for just being like a bad person. Like, you know.
Oh, that's what we're here to do. That's what
I mean, I'm just saying I don't care for a professional work.
No, I'm going deeper.
You're attacking the person themselves. Like, that's just harsh.
Don't turn this on me.
Jeez, Simon.
Here's my fifth unpopular opinion. You turning the whole segment against me. How about that?
Tell it to your Sound of Freedom loving Fox News buddies over there, Simon.
I
that's
know.
All I'm saying.
This has been such an odd podcast. Wow. All right. Okay.
Yeah, revealing your stripes and then suddenly trying to win currying favor your left-wing good time buddies by going, oh, subtitles are bad. Subtitles are good, but the actions of all of our behaviors are bad.
Hey, wait till we get to the what else have you been watching section and I want to comment on Depp versus Heard. Have you put anything in the what else have you been watching section this week?
We'll get to that in a moment, Simon. You still got one more unpopular thing you need to say.
No, I haven't. That was it. Oh, no, I have got one more.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have got one more. Okay. Phone use should be banned from cinemas. And I am not.
How is this an unpopular opinion, Simon?
No, it's not. Because once you say that cinemas should lead line their walls so that people can't use their phone inside a cinema and that phones have to be turned off when you buy a movie ticket to enter a film, people say, no, that's not practical, that's a banning of our civil rights, that's all those things. And I'm thinking, if you're queuing up for a 1 o'clock session of Slam Dunk and you're leaving and you're saying that you have to have your phone on for important reasons, you're wrong. You have decided to sit down and commit 2 hours of your life to watch a big screen movie. The only thing I would suggest is that people who have to use their phone are catered for by glassed off two back rows of the cinema, kind of like they do with annoying parents who want to take their newborns to the cinema. You put them in the two back rows where they can sit on their phones for the whole length of the film and not bother the people in front of them who won't see the light from the phone or hear the noise of its ringing. That's all I'm saying. I'm done. This segment's over. Good night, everyone.
Okay, here's where I'm going to push back on, well, I mean, all of that, which is that, one, this isn't an unpopular opinion, so that's twice you violated this segment, as you do each and every time we do one of these segments. You're like, I'm going to force you to do one thing, then you talk about something entirely different.
Turn our phones off at the movies. People don't want to turn their phones off. You tell the influencers of today who want to record the opening credits of the film to say, hey, look what I'm watching, hashtag Ant-Man. No.
I guarantee. You put one person out there being pro use of mobile phone out there and you're going to find 1,000 people ganging up on them. We know this because I see it on Twitter on an almost daily basis. Yeah. People will retweet that one sort of pro phone person and then it's just like they're the villain on Twitter for the day. But Simon, the thing that you said in there that I take particular exception to is your thing going, oh, they should have a walled off section in the back two rows. Spoken from the man who loves sitting at the front of the cinema. Me, yeah. I like sitting at the back and I don't want to look at somebody else's phone just consistently through the thing. But here's the thing, and I'm going to put this out there as a slight compromise to the humanity that exists in a cinema, the throbbing lifeblood that is the people that go to see a movie. I don't mind if somebody occasionally checks their phone briefly, okay? Like maybe their phone is lit up for something, they're like, ugh. Or maybe they want to check what the time is, and I'm a notorious, like, clock watcher because I kind of like to know where I'm at in a movie, okay? I'm it's not a sickness, Simon. It's being human.
You're going in at 1 o'clock to watch a movie. You know the movie's about 90 minutes long. You know at some point it's going to be 2:15 or it's going to be 2:40 or it's going to be 1:35. What does it matter what the time is when you settle in for a two-hour film?
I can give you a perfectly good example about this, Simon. I mean, sorry, two things. First of all, I like to know, because I like story structure. I like movie structure. I like to know, am I in a third act? Is it a bit of a fake out? Like, what's going on? And by knowing roughly how far in the movie I'm, sorry, Simon, this is my truth.
You check your time to know when the film goes into its third act. You know that by watching the film, not by checking the time.
No, you can tell. Like, fucking, if you watch one of those Lord of the Rings movies with 35 endings, how do you know? How do you know?
Oh, my God.
Okay, so, but I do that, Simon. That's a thing that I do. This is my truth. But then the other thing, Simon.
What about the century of cinema goers who watched movies without a phone that lit up?
Yeah, what about it? What's your point?
It's an accepted way to watch the film.
You don't have to
check your time. You don't have to see what that last text was. And if you have to, there's a glassed off section at the back of the movies of two rows that you can sit there and watch it in.
Are you telling me there's no one watching Vertigo who's like gotten out their watch which doesn't light up going, oh, yes, I believe. Sorry, because this is how people speak in 19. When did Vertigo, 1960. Two,
give or take.
I'd have to get I see what the time is now. Like, people looked at their clocks all the time, Simon. Just because you don't doesn't mean other people don't. So I don't mind. They get out their fob watch. Yeah, as Mr. Monopoly's there with his fob watch and his monocle.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's taking some time away from selling Park Road and So first of all, that always happened. So this isn't a new behavior. But secondly, as well, I don't mind that. And yesterday, just as a real-world example as to why looking at your phone might be important for reasons other than just curiosity about story structure, is I desperately needed to go to a pee because I had drunk way too much water when I was sitting in that cinema. And I'm like, when is this movie going to end? I really need to head to the men's room. But do I leave now just as it seems like the basketball game is about to reach its final? Because it was animation and that final minute took about 15 minutes of screen time, Simon. Can I leave now?
Are you telling me, as a mature age man, as a 40-something man, you can't tell how much longer you can hold your bladder for?
No, I know how long.
Is it such a point that you have to get up and go to the toilet now?
Well, I know how long I can hold my bladder for, and I drank a lot of water, and I knew that I probably wasn't going to make it to the end, which I did. I held on because I'm a grown-up man and can do that. But if I felt I had a bit more time under my sleeve or in my pants, I don't know how we're doing this metaphor, I would have ducked out and taken the 90 seconds to run to the men's room, take care of business, get back in there. So I guess Simon's final unpopular opinion, get rid of toilets from cinemas. No toilets. No going for a pee. Can't do it.
If you can't go before you leave home, then you shouldn't be able to go at all. Or duck out to the pub across the road or the council ones that are just about 50 metres down the road that are often locked. Anyway, I've said too much.
Just find a local building site.
Your moustache is starting to fall off, so I do want to thank you for going undercover as... you look like Ty Burrell a little bit from the something that he had a moustache in. Justin Theroux, maybe? You've got a hook there.
Anyway, yeah. Can I lead to a popular opinion? Let's end the segment.
Yes, please. That's a great idea. All right, Dan Barrett, we now get into the back end of the show. I see that you failed to fill out the running sheet. What else have you been watching, or should I go first?
Well, can I just ask that you go first, just out of politeness?
Sure, no worries at all. Depp versus Heard is on Netflix at the moment. It's one of the most watched Netflix releases. It is a documentary, a three-hour documentary that chronologically cuts together how the court case between Amber Heard and Johnny Depp unfolded, I guess just over a year ago now, the defamation suit. Now, it is a documentary about that, but it is primarily a documentary about how the internet reacted to it and how it fueled misogyny, how it interpreted the events of the court case in a way only the internet can do and has become infamous for, and how the influencers and the TikTokers and the Instagrammers used it as a means by which to engender themselves to a whole new audience. It's a really infuriating documentary, not because it's a poor quality one or because it uses recent events in a way that they maybe weren't intended, but because it shows just what an evil piece of shit the internet is and how so many people on it are just terrible. So I'd recommend, even if you think the raking over hot coals aspect of watching the Depp versus Heard trial again is not your cup of tea, this is not specifically about that. It takes on a different point of view, which I found really not entertaining, but sort of got me thinking and made me look at what we do and how we use our technology in a different way. It's called Depp versus Heard. It's on Netflix.
I kind of feel that's not really going to introduce any new conversations to me at all, so I'm going to give that one a miss. I think they're both ridiculous people and I've got no interest.
I was caught a little bit offside, a little bit off guard by sort of the path it went down and how it sort of presented ugly people doing ugly things in the name of their website or the name of their YouTube channel. So that's not new, that obviously, but it is an interesting way in which it's told. So have you been watching anything else?
Look, I actually have been watching a lot of stuff, but I've been under embargo, so I can't actually talk about what I've been watching.
Oh, you've been ruled over by the man.
Yeah, very much so. Cowtailing entirely.
Let's go into In History, because that intermission section just blew out of way out of proportion, so we better rush through this. In History, August 30, 1936. I'll say that again. August 30, 1966, which medical drama starring Richard Chamberlain and Raymond Massey ends after a five-year run on NBC TV?
So I'm pretty certain Chamberlain was the titular Dr. Kildare, so I'm going to say that show.
It was Dr. Kildare.
Yeah.
September 1st, 2006, which European nation becomes the first country to complete the move to all digital television broadcasting?
Look, I'm not too sure, but I'm going to assume that it's one of the Scandi countries because they're always a bit on the front foot, so I'm just going to say Sweden.
You're close. It's Luxembourg, the very smallest of the nations. Impressive. And on September 2, 1987, Philips introduces which video consumer format?
Sorry, is it introducing it for them or is it actually introducing the consumer format, the video format?
All the words are in the task there. All the instructions are on the task.
Sorry, Simon, have you just lifted this from a website without really putting a lot of extra, like...
All the words are on the task.
Okay, because it's not VHS.
No, it's not VHS. It's not by 87. Good Lord, no, that's been around for a
long time. Yeah, because, I mean, that's like late 70s VHS came along. I'm thinking, I thought maybe like, you know, they started VHS then, like maybe they'd been sort of gung-ho. Like
beta people or something. No, Philips right there at the start with VHS.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I'm going to say video CD.
No, the answer is, in fact, CD video. So we'll have to just draw a line through your answer there. Yes, it was. CD video or video CD was released on September 2, 1987 through the Philips Corporation. Well done, Philips.
And obviously not really a format that took off in a lot of Western countries, but Asia, they're a bit more into video CDs.
Yeah. Asia. That's not a country. Birthdays is what we're doing now.
No. Not happy birthday. No, not that. Please. No. Not happy birthday.
August 28, 1957. Yeah. One Daniel Stern was born. Funny guy. August 29, 1959. Rebecca De Mornay was born. Beautiful woman. September 1st, 1920. The wonderful Richard Farnsworth. And September 2, 1964. A young man named Keanu Reeves, who was actually born in Lebanon but raised in Hawaii. Now, what do Daniel Stern, Rebecca De Mornay, Richard Farnsworth, and Keanu Reeves all have in common? They've all been in this kind of a movie with this kind of a setting.
I mean, Daniel Stern, like, this is more challenging than I really would have thought. So Daniel Stern, this is what I know about Daniel Stern, narrator for The Wonder Years. Okay, I think we can safely assume that Rebecca De Mornay has not been a ongoing narrator for any sort of coming-of-age dramas set in the 1950s, 60s.
No.
So probably
Daniel
not.
Daniel Stern was one of the Wet Bandits, don't forget
that. Well, that's what I was about to say. So we know he was a Wet Bandit, but I don't think that Keanu Reeves has ever been a Wet Bandit. And I doubt Richard Farnsworth has been either. De Mornay, I can't say one way or another. Daniel Stern, we also know that he helped deliver a calf in the City Slickers movies.
This was not on the brochure. Yeah, that was Billy Crystal, yep.
Yeah, and he was, of course, one of the Oppenheimer folks in the TV series Manhattan. Wow. Outside of that, I don't really know much more about Daniel Stern, and I certainly know next to nothing about De Mornay. Farnsworth, I don't really know at all. And Keanu Reeves, I know dramatically well, but can't find any crossover with the rest. So you've got me. I'm completely out. I can't work out what this would be. Other than they've all played surfers who are also cops.
Ooh. Okay. So you came dangerously close to a sport there, and these are all sport-related roles. These four people have all played prominent parts in baseball movies. Daniel Stern was in Rookie of the Year. Rebecca De Mornay was in The Slugger's Wife. Richard Farnsworth, of course, within that classic The Natural. And Keanu Reeves was in Hardball. They've all played baseball movies.
What was Hardball?
Hardball, he was the coach of a tough sort of little league team, and he had to bring all the kids together and in that beautiful sort of baseball-y way.
Okay. Well, cool.
Well done.
Yeah. Okay. You know, the more you learn.
The more you learn. That's the truth in you, Dan, that we all really are striving for. As you,
we can only speak to your own personal truths.
That's the word I'm looking for. Yes, your own personal truths. I think there's something in that for all of us.
I mean, I can only speak for myself. Yeah, Simon, I think we're done.
I've got a film festival to go and do.
Yeah, look, I've got your film festival to go and do. Folks, thank you very much for listening to Screen Watching. Really, thank you. I mean, it was really just work you shouldn't have had to put in. Start your day with my free newsletter. It's called Always Be Watching. Find that one at alwaysbewatching.com. It's got the stories in TV, streaming, and film. And on Fridays, I drop the Always Be Streaming newsletter, which recounts the big shows that launched that very week.
Screen Watching is all over your social pages on Facebook at Screen Watching Podcast, Twitter at Screen _ Watching. Are we still calling it Twitter or is it X now? I don't know what that's about.
We still call it Twitter.
There's a wonderful Screen Watching YouTube channel you really should go to. And you can email us at screenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com with all your complaints about the views expressed in our intermission section today.
Sure. Folks, this has been Screen Watching. We'll be back next week. Simon, what are the big movies you were talking about? Like, what's dropping next week?
Equalizer 3. We're all queuing up for that, aren't we? Mm. We're a fan of the Equalizer chain.
I've not seen any of the films.
Wow. Okay, that puts you on the back foot already with my views on the Equalizer films. Haunted Mansion's out. There's a wonderful movie out next week called Past Lives, which a lot of people have talked about being
a serious Oscar contender. It's a Korean film, I believe.
And also, may I ask Ego, you a question?
Michael Good. Yes.
Sorry, can I ask a question? That was on the rundown for this week because there are advanced screenings all weekend. Why is it not being discussed? Like, why haven't we talked about that in the last hour?
Well, part of reviewing a film is actually having to watch it, and I have not seen it as yet, my friend. So that is why it was bumped. So
sorry, considering some of the content, because of some of the content of this podcast, is this because the stars of it are not white people? Is that the problem, Simon?
Oh, here we go. Look out. Yes, exactly. It's overly woke. No, well, I saw Haunted Mansion and I saw there was a bunch of movies out next week, so I dropped Haunted Mansion in ahead of Past Lives. Haven't seen it though. I've been busy. I've been setting up film festival spots for you and your endeavors. But if you do get along, and see Electric Dreams with one Dan Barrett out front, talking at length about how it was a seminal moment in his movie-going life, do drop us a line. Tell us how he did. I'm keen to see if he represented.
Yeah. What I will say, though, is that Past Lives is a very good movie, and Simon should have seen that and reviewed it this week instead of Haunted Mansion, which was always going to be terrible.
Have you seen Past Lives already?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, sorry, Simon. I just did that on top of having a full-time job, doing some, you know, newsletters during the week, being a pretty actively involved parent, and taking care of all the other things that I do on a daily basis.
Yes, we all look up to the task you set for yourself through the week, don't we, Dan Barrett? I love talking with you on this podcast. We're going to get some emails about that middle bit, don't worry. All right, goodbye.
Folks, have a good week. We'll talk to you next week, where we talk about Past Lives, a movie that you need to check out in cinemas. See you soon.